Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of entrepreneurs who are often building their businesses. We've talked about software as a service invading. I wouldn't even call it invading. Getting everywhere. One place that we hadn't talked about, and I hadn't seen it yet, is in parking garages. Get this. Today's guest, Jerry Scalett, recognized something that you and I recognize. When you go park your car somewhere, where are you, by the way, Jerry? Are you in a hotel?
Yeah.
You are. Okay. All right. Thanks for doing this from there. When you get into, when you go out of a parking garage from the mall or from a hotel, you can end up waiting in a line of 5-6 cars. And if the person in front of you has kids who are screaming, it's going to take longer. If they forgot where their credit card was, or if they're like me, I lately haven't been carrying my credit card because everything's on Apple Pay except some random parking garage, then you're going to wait even longer. And if you're like so many of us who lived in San Francisco who have to go to the mall, you recognize on the way out that if you're in line and you still hadn't paid before you get in line to get out, you have to back out, park your car, take your credit card out to one of the machines, pay, then get one of those tickets and get back in line and then hand the ticket to the machine in order to get out. Think about how tough that is for everyone involved. Well, Jerry said, you know, there's got to be a better way. And he's a guy who's been in the parking space business for decades. And he said, I think I know it. And he was wrong. And he was wrong because he pursued it the way that you and I might have pursued it. But he's persistent. And so he evolved and he created this great process. It's called Spaces. I invited him here to talk about how it works. I want to find out how he created it after iterating on it. I want to find out how he's getting parking lots to actually implement this when they already have a system that works. And frankly, because he's got this experience in the parking business, a business that I don't know much about, but I'm fascinated by, I'm hoping we'll talk about that. And we could do it thanks to my sponsor, HostGator. If you're hosting a website, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. But I'll talk about that later. First, Jerry, good to have you here.
Hey, you know, pleasure to be here, Andrew. I can't wait to talk about it.
Walk me through how a Spaces experience works. I talked to you about the bad part. Let's talk about what you created.
So what we created is that to utilize our product, all you need to do is you dial a number. It's posted at the entrance of the parking facility on a digital sign. You dial that telephone number. That automatically accesses the gate. The gate opens. When you park, you receive a text message to set up your payment platform and our partner Stripe. And so you're either hooked into Apple Pay, Google Pay, or you put in a credit card. You only ever have to do that one time. And then when you get to the exit gate, you dial the number at the exit and you're out. And it's that simple.
Because they now know who it is who's going out, because my phone number is connected to my credit card, because they see that I've dialed it, and so they just will open up the gate, and they know how long I've been in there. It's just, I love the simplicity of it. I love that you're doing Stripe, so I don't even have to type in my credit card information. It just works. And then who's paying for this?
So we charge the end user, the parker, $1.
Okay.
And so there's a transaction fee that's on top of their parking charge of $1. And that's it.
And for a dollar, you also collect credit. You also pay credit card processing fees, right? I'm assuming you charge that to the, you pass that on to the parking lot owner?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. So the only difference that they see is $1 per car, and they don't even have to pay that. Meanwhile, what you're replacing is what? What's the system like before? Financially, I mean.
So the systems in a typical parking garage, that system costs $500,000. It costs $50,000 a year to maintain. And with our system, you only need a gate and your own phone. That's it.
And do you pay for the gate, or they pay for the gate?
Yeah, we work with the current gates that are in the facilities, and if there aren't any gates, we add gates. But that's the most inexpensive part of a parking system, and gate technology has been the same for 40 years. So I mean, it's rock solid technology. You probably have experienced it thousands of times. The gate does go up, and the gate goes down.
So that's it.
So,
They just have their date. Instead of paying for their current system, you just take the whole thing out and you replace it with a sign with a phone number, and that's the whole thing. And how much revenue are you producing so far?
So we're at $1 million a month. It grows. It's been growing 20% month over month, and that's even during COVID. Which has impacted the parking business, quite a bit. And so it's really been, it's just been amazing because we started off just in commercial buildings. Now we're in hospitals, airports, hotels, event venues, and the use cases, change almost on a daily basis.
You told a producer the realization about the importance of technology struck you when you were driving with someone. I guess this was in Atlanta, and you saw the person do what?
Yes. So I bought a company called Lanier Parking.
What is Lanier Parking?
Lanier Parking is a parking operator I built the second largest parking company in the United States in the last decade. I sold that in 2018 to SoftBank.
To a company owned by SoftBank, right? If I understand the way that this works is someone will have a building, the landlord doesn't want to manage the parking lot, and then they turn it over to you, and what you do is you install the machinery that makes the arm go up and down, the credit cards, and everything else, and then you pay. How does it work? You pay them rent, or you pay them a percentage of sales, or a combination?
Usually, most of the contracts it's like a property management type contract. The owner of the garage pays the parking company a management fee to manage the cleaning, the maintenance of the systems, provide employees, the day-to-day operations of that. And so Lanier Parking, which is a fantastic, company that I owned, when I bought the company, I wanted to see some of my locations. So they were based in Atlanta. That was their headquarters. And I wanted to see some of the locations. And so I went out with the general manager, and he had plotted on his phone all of the locations on Google Maps. And so we went from location to location and navigated, to the locations. And maybe I'm a little old school. I'm still one of those guys that, I understand geography. I know north and south and east and west, and if you tell me an address, I can go find it. Well, the new generation, they don't do that. They just put their addresses in Google, and that's how they find it. So I asked him, could you find your locations without Google Maps? And he said, I don't think so. And I really was struck by that. And I started paying attention to see how many people use Google Maps, how many people use Waze, how many people use Apple Maps, but what were they really doing when they were navigating around a city? And I was stunned to see that almost everyone, even if they took the same route to work every day, they were using navigation to find out what the traffic was, if they needed a change. And I just, I was really shocked by that. So that got me thinking about mobile technology and parking. In my mind, it started in navigation, and it ended up, also with access, right?
The first thought seemed to have been to say, if everyone's using this to navigate to their location, then once they get to their location, they're hunting for parking just by looking around and hoping that they find it. Maybe there's a better way, right?
Yeah, because there was a great study that was done pre-COVID by a company called INREX in Seattle. They accumulate a lot of traffic data, and they came out with a study that said 30% of the trips inside a downtown core are generated by looking for parking. So they're driving around, and what we found in Waze and Google Maps that, you know, Andrew, you and I, we would navigate to a building address, but that's not necessarily the parking address. So you would go to Madison Square Garden, you navigate to Madison Square Garden, and then you start looking for parking. So I asked a bigger question. This was in 2018 and 2019. What would happen if inside of Google Maps and Waze, if I actually asked Andrew if he wanted to park at Madison Square Garden, and if you said yes, I give him a map of locations that he could change the navigation specifically to the garage entrance, and would that be more efficient? Would people actually do that? So I funded a $500,000 study that was matched by Waze for 9 months in 300 facilities. And, you know, we had an in-app experience in Waze that would basically
ask
you to do that.
If I said, well, I'm going to the Apple store,
yeah.
As soon as Waze knew that that was a store and had a parking lot next to it, it would say, do you want to go into the Apple store, or are you trying to get to the parking garage? If I say parking, then it would take me over to one of your spots, and you wanted to see how many people would say yes to that, and then also how valuable was that to you. Is that right? Okay.
Right. Yep. And so in the world of big data, you know, we knew how many organic at navigations were already going to those places, then how many more did they increase, right? So what we found is in a 9 month period, we generated 165,000 more navigations specifically to those facilities. And it increased by 40% over the organic navigation. So customers and people really found that valuable because it saved a massive amount of time and effort.
I see that. I don't know why it still doesn't exist, though. I didn't realize this because I've lived in big cities my whole life. We were in San Francisco for about 8 years.
Yeah.
You're basically asking for directions to the store, to the store's front door. You're walking there, biking there, taking an Uber there. You don't need the parking lot. I'm in Austin right now, and sure enough, this is becoming a big problem for me. Partially it's because it's a new city, but the other part is I don't need to go directly to the front door of the mall if the Apple store is really, sometimes it could be about a mile away, and I had no idea. This is like big city kid. All right, and so why isn't this now in Waze and in Google Maps and in every other map?
Well, there, you know, we're attempting to really help, you know, make that happen. And part of what we discovered is that here, Andrew, you have your mobile device in your car. We navigated you to that garage entrance, and then you had to go into this whole other ecosystem of entering, parking, paying, and exiting. And it's like, whoa, wait, time. Look, we should be able to stay into the mobile platform and that ecosystem to do everything. Why are we asking a customer to go outside of
that? You're saying, why are we so smart that we're able to get them away from traffic to their destination faster? So smart, we're able to understand that they want a parking spot and then navigate them to the parking spot. But as soon as we get them to where they're going, we go back to old dumb technology where somebody has to go with a credit card to some kind of kiosk in order to pay before they leave or wait in line. All right. So before we close out the previous business, Lanier, am I pronouncing it right? But you were able to do this with Google. Why didn't Google expand this? Why didn't Waze expand it beyond your lots? Are they still doing this? Is it still growing?
So they're attempting to. The challenge for them is that anything that Google does is advertising supported. So if you're going to do that, you have to pay for that. And an individual garage, for instance, it's very difficult for a garage owner to really set up a marketing program for one site on Google Maps, on Waze. The costs are very high, and in parking, 95% of the cars that go there really pick it because it's a geocentric business. I'm close to a meeting or something like that. So for the garage owner, it's a pretty complicated process. What we brought to the table and what we're doing is that we offer up that as part of our service that we provide the garage owner. So and we can buy that advertising, we can buy all of that on a bulk basis and make it worthwhile. And we do all the heavy lifting. We have a direct relationship on how to do it. We
Got
know
it.
how to do it. We perfected
So what
it.
you're saying is
And
Google
so
couldn't
that's part of
expand
what
this
we
for all
provide.
parking lots because most parking lots just don't have the energy, the effort, and then the payoff for doing this for one-off. But you at Spaces have now rolled this into your offering. So in addition to making it easier for consumers to pay for their parking spot, you're also making it easier for consumers to find these parking spots because you're buying those spots from Google in bulk. Okay,
And we think it's important because at the end of the day, we just want, people to have a better experience. We want people to save time and effort. I think that, part of me also been in the business a long time. If I can reduce the traffic on the street, then, there's environmental aspects of that that are really, really beneficial. Less pollution, less smog, less the wasting of time, less gas being, burned and everything. And, it all adds up. And I just think that it's just the right thing to do. The technology exists.
Okay,
Let's just
so
make it
once you
easy for
said
everyone to
this is the
use.
idea, is that when you decided to sell Lanier, or was it afterwards that you said, I think I've got this new idea?
No,
Okay.
I sold Lanier before the idea. The idea was definitely was birthed, by watching what, I had 1,200 parking facilities around the United States. I had 300 in New York. And so I had a very, very close view of, what my own company was doing, what consumers were doing, what the trends were. I found, and I'm a leader in the industry, but I just find that, from a technology basis, right, there's industries
Yeah.
out there that just don't change very quickly,
Yeah, and
and parking's one
truthfully,
of
what
them,
you're
right?
offering is a solution that provides a lot of value to the consumer, but marginal small increase to the garage owner at first, the first version anyway. In fact, let's talk about how you did this. So you sold the business. Do you take some time out for yourself to do something fun?
This is my I've started eight companies in 40 years, right? And so I'm just one of those guys that I did take a year off once after selling one of my companies. The first 3 months were, I got some good rest. The next 3 months I wore out all my friends because they had to work and I went to play golf. And then I found that, I really was kind of bored and ready to really focus on what the next thing was going to be. And since then, I just love what I do. So this is not work for me. It's just not.
Okay. And frankly, from what I know about you, even when you're not working, yes, you play golf, but apparently you're like a real die-hard athlete. So you climbed how many mountains?
So I've climbed four of the seven summits, the tallest mountains in the world. I was in the I actually made it to the Ironman World Championship in Hawaii and participated, in that and finished and all of that. It was amazing. I'm a surfer. Yeah, I mean, I'm an active, still active
I want to do an Ironman. I did a half Ironman
guy.
race. I've done a bunch of marathons.
Yeah.
It seems like it's such a time commitment. I think most people are intimidated by the swim. I think a 2 mile swim will take me 2 hours or so. Is that a long time? How long did it take you?
Well, I think on the On the world championship, it was 58 minutes for me to do that part of it.
Whoa. Okay.
And so, so I became, I grew up in a small town in Kansas, and, swimming in ponds, doesn't really prepare you to swim an Ironman.
Because you're
So
swimming in open
I,
water, right?
yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, some Ironmen are done in lakes. I feel like
Right.
that's a pleasurable swim compared to what you're doing. So you're swimming with waves. Not only that, I've read stories about people getting hit in the face while they're swimming, which is so
Sure.
jarring, right? And then you don't know what the temperature is going to be that day. So how long did it take you to train to do that? It's for people who don't know, it's about 2 mile swim. It's a little over 100 mile bike ride. What is it, 110 miles?
114 miles.
114 miles, and then you get
Yep.
the marathon length run, 26.2. So the
Yep.
problem for me is I could do the swim apparently at twice the time it takes you. I could do the run probably much longer than it takes you. But the bike ride, it's a long time to train to do 100 miles. It takes hours, right?
Yeah. So that, that bike ride, in my age division, is a 7 hour bike ride.
Yeah. So where do you have the time? So when people say it must be great to have the time to play golf, you must go, golf is nothing. Golf is like a short afternoon to go train to do a 100 mile bike ride. And so how tell me about the training to get yourself from zero to Ironman, and then we'll get back into the parking business.
Okay.
How'd you
Well,
do
look,
it?
to actually qualify for the world championship, it took me 12 years. And of doing races and getting better, and you kind of build up, right? So you've done a half. So you start with the sprints and you go move up to the Olympic distances, halves, and you go to the full ones. So part of, that takes a few years of, endurance training. And then when you finally get to that level, I would train, anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours every morning. And then on the weekends, I would do a Saturday big run and a Sunday, I mean, a Saturday, a big bike ride and a Sunday, a big run. And then you just keep building up like you do in marathon training, you just keep adding miles and miles and miles. And so you're never really going up to the race. You're not doing an Ironman every weekend or something like
But you're doing a
that.
marathon every
You know,
weekend, it seems like, for a while. No.
now you're probably 18
Okay.
mile runs, 16 mile runs, 50 mile bike rides, 75 mile bike
What
rides,
does it
things
say
like
about
that.
you, Jerry, that you're willing to do this, invest over a decade of your life in order to do the Ironman, that you're willing to climb four of the top peaks? What is it about you?
Well, what I really enjoy about it, it's very much like starting a business and all of the things that you have to be able to overcome to finish, right? And but it's a it, it's in its own way, it's a compressed time frame. So a business might be 3 to 5 years or more. And a mountain climb, you might be 3 weeks. To climb a mountain of that magnitude, maybe a month, but it's the same thing. It's all about overcoming. So, I have a famous saying. It's like, and I would have friends go with me, and about 10 days into these trips, they would say, I'm going back to the United States because Jerry, this trip doesn't look like the brochure,
That's the
right?
part that you like. You like that
And
you train to do
I
something and
do.
it's clear, there's a clear goal here, and you plan, and then something goes wrong. What's gone wrong? What's one of the toughest things to have gone wrong? Like what?
Everything goes wrong. So, on a mountain climb, the food is bad. You probably, get diarrhea, you get sick. The weather's bad. You have equipment failures. The trail gets washed out. You get, the weather turns bad, you stay in the tent for 3 days.
Yep.
I mean, everything that you could think of goes wrong, it always goes wrong. And so what happens to people, Andrew, is that they actually lose sight of why they're doing it. And they lose sight of what it's going to feel like on the summit, that actually the journey of all of this is really can be enjoyable if you inside go like, well, I expected things to go wrong. I can overcome that. I can overcome that. And I think that business is the same. You have a lot of people that they think about, hey, I just want to make a bunch of money. They run into resistance and it's a lot harder than they thought. They lose sight of where
and
they
so
were
for
trying
you,
to
it's,
go.
You get sick, the think, food is bad, you're missing something that you should have had with you. And you think, where other people say, this is a disaster, it didn't go well, you think, this is part of the process I expected, and it's going to feel so good when I hit the summit after all of this because I struggled. And then why does it feel so good at the end? Why is that such a big, meaningful goal for you?
Yeah, because I think that, you know, first of all, you accomplished it. But I think the second thing is that if you really are joyful in the process, right? And saying like, you know, when I'd have equipment failures, it would be like, well, of course that was going to happen. And then it would feed the energy in me and go like, well, now this summit's even going to be more because of look at everything I had to overcome.
Yeah,
so it's a
mindset,
right?
That this is going to be
it's
even
a mindset.
Now I'm getting a bigger reward because I've overcome these bigger obstacles.
You got it. And once you have trained yourself in that manner in business and sports and all those things, people just don't understand. It's like, you know, even now when someone comes to me with a big business problem in one of my companies, I think they can tell you 100% of the time, I hope that problem is massive. I'll be whooping it up. I'm going like, yeah, right on. This is going to be fantastic. Because now I know on the other side of that is going to be a massive reward.
Okay,
and it
so
goes
which
hand
spaces,
in hand.
You had a big idea. Let's improve this process that millions of people are going to experience. You then, what do you start with? Do you start creating the product first, or do you go out to a few lots and say, will you install whatever I create?
Yeah, so I've started software companies before, technology companies before, and my process is that I quick fail things. So I don't over-engineer something. I want to get it in testing as soon as I possibly can at the lowest level of production I can, because I know I'm going to fail, you know, at least three times. And so since I've been in the business, I have access to the garage owners, the operators, and yeah, I can set up test sites. And so once I had a product that would work, then I immediately, you know, get it into test facilities, and I filmed, you know, thousands of customers using it, you know, what went wrong, what didn't work. You know, we started off on an app-based system because we kind of thought that's what we should do. But what we really discovered, which was beautiful, was that we didn't actually, that was an impediment. It made it more difficult. And we had to step back and go like, well, what's something that I always do with my mobile device? Well, I make telephone calls. And in fact, I have been using a phone since I've been 7 years old. I know how to do it without any training. And I thought, well, I wonder if we can actually leverage that to create a payment platform and access. And just by being more curious,
so the
right,
first version
we figured
was
it
an
out.
App.
We figured
you
it
create
out.
It, you put it in a lot, and you watch people use it and stumble to download, get frustrated. You personally are watching this happen, and this thing that you built is stinking, and you're not frustrated. This is kind of exciting for you. And so you say, what can we solve? And you come up with this idea that we talked about. Actually, what was the process to get to that? Was the first version text-based? Was the first version calling up and having somebody enter information? What was it?
The first version, you downloaded an
No, I mean,
app and it accessed
yeah,
Bluetooth
I think
technology in your
you've talked
phone.
about the problem with Bluetooth. It's not consistent. Frankly, just downloading the app, you lost me at that because for every little thing that I do, I don't want to download another app. It takes forever to do it. It slows me down when I'm looking for that, is this thing worth doing or not? So you then switch to text messaging or phone calls. What was the first version of that? Because that's not an obvious solution the way that you came up with it, where people call and then there's text, then there's call, and that's like it's elegant, but how'd you iterate to that?
Well, I thought, so then I actually received a, I can't remember the company, but I received a text message, right? And I thought, well, I wonder if you could text to actually open a gate. Would that work? I tested that and I watched customers do that. And people are not that when you do a dual code text, right? Text this number, text this
No,
message.
I don't know why. That bothers me too for
It's
some
not that
reason.
easy.
And I'll see people say, just text, it's four numbers or five numbers that you text to, and you text the word park or whatever. It is for some reason a pain. Okay, and so you tried that, and then you said, let's do phone call.
So I tried that, and so then I go like, okay, well, I'm getting closer. Right, I'm getting closer because a text you don't have to download anything. So I knew that was critical. And so then I said, well, wait a minute. I wonder if we actually what was the original purpose of a mobile phone? To dial a mobile number. Why what let's take it down to it's the very core of what it was built for. And that's when magic happened. It was magical. And we saw people actually have an emotional impact to it because it was like you could see in people's faces like what took
Yeah,
the
that's such a
industry
good feeling,
so
huh? When you
long
see
to
someone do
figure
that. And
that
frankly, even as
out,
a
right?
consumer, to have that experience feels so good. All right. I've got to pause here. One of the things that I've discovered in these interviews is that great ideas do start with a problem, and you experienced a problem or you noticed a problem. The consumers are frustrated taking out credit cards, waiting in line, that whole thing. The other thing I noticed is if the person who's paying has the problem, they will pay for the solution. If the person who's paying doesn't have the problem, but their customers do, they may or may not, and they definitely don't feel a sense of urgency. So how did you know that they would be willing to pay for this, or that they would be willing to suffer to try some new technology just to benefit some consumers who
Well,
really have no affinity for the parking lot in the first place, and whatever problem they have maybe seems insignificant to the parking lot owner?
I think that, well, first of all, it's a real problem for the parking lot owner because what happens is that if the systems are not working well, or you talked about getting trapped in the lane and not being able to pay and all those kinds of things, well, that disruption creates a real business problem in the facility. And so gates are getting broken, maybe you call security, they raise the gate to let the customer out. There's a lot of disruption that happens in the facility. And so what I wanted to do though, and I tested this in New York City, I really wanted to see if consumers would be willing to pay an extra charge, right? And so in our test facilities in New York, we did as many as 17,000 transactions a day at a dollar, and we did this for months and months and months. I got four complaints.
Though I've got to say, Jerry, that's New
That's
York. I
it.
remember occasionally I drive from Queens into Manhattan, park in Manhattan, pay 40, $50 for just a few hours of parking, and think I should have just called a taxi. There are dollars insignificant. How'd you know then the people outside of New York would be as forgiving of expenses?
Well, here's the thing. I live in New York right now, right? And so the thing, you're right about the pricing, but what I do find that's one of the reasons I love New York is that, people are vocal here. And they will tell you the truth. And so if they don't like something, they will absolutely tell you, regardless of the price or anything else. So I really felt like I put it in, put that concept to test in maybe one of the most, you know, vocal markets in the world that you could have. So I knew I could do it. And then when my next facilities were in Indianapolis and Austin, Texas, and places like that, right? And the experience was the same. Even though the price of the parking was a little bit less, it didn't matter. And so, you know, that's just never been an issue for us at all.
All right, let me talk about my first sponsor and then we'll come back into the story. And I'd like to hear about the pre-spaces part of your career. My sponsor is HostGator. For anyone out there who needs a website for your business, all you have to do is go to hostgator.com/mixergy. When you do, they'll give you a discount on their already low price. Their hosting will just freaking work and you'll be able to forget about it and start focusing on your business. I know I did. I switched to them. Nothing happened. Everything was great except my price was lower. And frankly, I don't even know their phone number or contact information or how they're invisible because they work. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Get that short URL. And when you do, you'll get a great price. And frankly, I'll also get credit for sending you over. So I appreciate you for doing that. All right. What's your process for signing up parking lots that maybe already have a system in place that maybe are already committed?
Yeah. So, you know, we look for, there are over 40,000, gated parking facilities in the urban cores.
And that includes
in the United States.
The ones that are in a building where they're not charging, but people in a residential building just want to get in and out of their place. Okay.
Yeah. And so, and at least half of those have parking equipment that's over a decade old. And what's interesting is that, you know, when I started my career in the early 80s, the parking equipment was less sophisticated, but it lasted longer. The more computer based it's gotten, the life of the systems have drastically gone down because they're more sophisticated electronically, but technology changes so quickly that, you know, they become obsolete in about 5 years. So there's a whole bunch of legacy old systems there that they still work. They're not working well. And you know, particularly now in the we're post-COVID now, right? But in this environment, the real estate industry has been hit hard. There's not a lot of CapEx dollars available, you know, to make improvements over the next 2 or 3 years. And so they're kind of trying to keep these systems, you know, working a little bit longer. And meanwhile, and while we come along, we have a system that works with a gate that's the very stable part of the parking, and it costs the owner nothing to do it, and it solves a big problem for them. So, you know, we basically
never get a no,
frankly.
You're saying this thing that's costing you a lot of money and going to continue to cost you even more money because it's getting older and older at a time when you don't have money to spend on it, will eliminate all that expense and make it work better for your customers and get them out the garage faster. That's the sales pitch. Wow, I can't believe it costs $50,000 to maintain it. Where does the money go? To maintain what?
You know, it's a software.
Oh, they're
SaaS
also paying
models.
Software as a service fees
so
every year. Okay.
Absolutely, and so, and anytime you want to make a change in the system, you know, it's $25,000 and. You know, there's a lot of cost. Now, look, I understand that. That's their business. That's how they make money. But, you know, what's happened, the new technologies of the world, Andrew, are the fact that you get access into the cloud and that you own your own hardware. And so, that's why we leverage the mobile device because we own that, right? And I don't have to buy it. You already own it. So how can I utilize that to actually run the business? And again, it's just more efficient. The cost, and you know, I don't have to tell Apple or Android to increase.
They
to
automatically
upgrade
add
systems.
Apple Pay, and they make it easier, and then
month,
they start
right?
adding my credit cards into the phone as soon as I set up a brand new phone. And so they're doing your work for you. All right, I get how you are right now.
Yep.
Let's go back to how you got started. How'd you get started in this business?
Well, look, every good story,
okay.
every good story has
the
a
best
woman
ones,
involved,
yes.
right? So I started, I graduated from Kansas University. My girlfriend at the time was going to grad school at KU Med Center in Kansas City. So we're dating. I love her. I'm going to go over there and you know, find a job in Kansas City. And so I started my career as a valet parking manager at the Hyatt Regency in Kansas City. And so that's how I got started in the business. And I grew up on, you know, in a small town. I was a cowboy on a ranch for 5 years. And, you know, I never paid for parking.
And now these people are paying extra so that they not only park, but also have somebody park their car for them.
And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And so I became super curious about the business. The company that I started with, they were called Central Parking. And it was a relatively small regional company at the time. But the owner had a big
By
vision
managing
of being
lots
the
that
largest
already
parking
existing.
Company in
okay.
the world. Yeah. And I was there 14 years. I moved to 8 different cities during that period of time and became, you know, part of really the top 4 people in the company. And it was just,
what'd you love
just
about
raw
it?
Passion.
The
I
acquisition?
Just loved it. I really loved it. Yeah. You know, it, I like hard work. And the thing is that the career path, it's one of those careers that if you worked harder and really applied yourself, you had a lot more opportunities. And when I was a cowboy, I used to raise cattle. And I'll never forget one year I always had 100 calves. I took them to market, and the beef market was really down. And by the time I paid my feed bill, you know, all my expenses that year, I had $75 left over. And my car insurance was $65. So I had $10 left. And I remember going like, you know, I worked hard for this, and the market controlled what I was going to make or not make. Nothing had nothing to do with my hard work. So I go, this isn't for me. I'm going to do something that if I work hard, that I can actually make a difference, right? And the parking industry really is that. It's a lot of hardworking people, but you can make a difference. Yeah.
And so you also said in addition to that you started a few businesses. Yes. I tried to look them up.
Yes.
I don't know what they are. What are they?
Well, so, several. One is M1 Advertising. And so this one became really quite famous because you know what binge watching is, right? So I can claim that I founded binge watching. And so I had this great idea. Have you ever seen the Highlander movies or Highlander television series?
Though.
So it was a sci-fi movies and it became a television series. And at one time it was the second most watched show around the world. Number one was Baywatch,
okay.
by the way.
On syndication.
But they had a European version, and the European version had more blood and more skin and things. And so I had this idea that, what if we packaged a season, the European versions, and which there were 14 episodes. And what if we sold those as a package to people so that they could, you know, buy them and watch three episodes, right? And this is actually in the VHS days. So I tested it. There's a famous production company called Davis Panzer Productions that did the movies and the TV show. And I came up with this idea for Peter Davis, the producer. And so we sold this, we sold the sets for $150, believe it or not. And we sold millions of them. And so then if you bought season one, you would want season two, then you'd want season three, you'd want season four.
Where'd you sell this? At Blockbuster?
No, we sold them on, we ran television commercials during the show.
Ah, got it. For people who want to buy the box set of the European. Oh, wow.
And they would call and we would get thousands and thousands and thousands of calls. So that was M1 advertising. We did that for, you know, for years.
Looks like a 10-year run. I'm looking all this stuff up as we're talking in Pasadena.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. It was great. We did, I had, a company called Smart Sound, which it was a soundtrack creation tool for movie producers and video producers. That company just did phenomenally well. Several patents with that. DVC Direct, which was we packaged the first video clips that people could. So, for instance, if you see a Titan rocket take off, you see the space shuttle take off, you see Earth from space, all these classic clips, right? Well, what I did is I licensed the JPL NASA library and digitized it so you could put it in movies and television commercials and things like that.
And how did you sell that? Was that an online sales experience or?
They were online sales, and at the time they were on, the files are big, so they'd be on DVDs. And so then when the internet really started taking off, we started a company called 24/7 Digital that we had a process of now downloading all of that, licensing that to advertising agencies and things. I owned a company called Stop Pain, which was I bought that out of bankruptcy. It was a topical analgesic company. It still exists today. It's in every.
How do you even come up with the? It seems like maybe you got into the advertising business, and then from there you're looking for something to sell for yourself, and then from there you said these people want content. Is that where the chain of thinking went?
Yeah, no, it is, and I think that what and it's really benefited me, you know, in business. I like challenges, and so if I came across and I, you know, you'd probably go like, well, how does that all fit? It was always following a passion, right? If it was an opportunity and I would feel a passion for that, I would dive into it. And I really just wanted to, frankly, train myself not to be afraid that if, even because I'd never done it before, when I did my first television commercial, and Peter Davis said, "Well, Jerry, this is a great idea. Have you ever done a television commercial before?" And I said, "Absolutely not, but I know I can." And we actually won awards on our TV commercials. So, I just wanted to not be afraid.
What's your, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what is your methodology? What is your methodology for being afraid, getting past it, and then finding a way to be productive? It feels like for some people, it's I'm going to find the person who does it the best, and I'll talk to that person and then hire her and then work with her. For other people, it's insane research. What is Jerry's system?
Well, I would definitely talk to people that had done it, and I would seek out that knowledge, right? And then really, I would just at that point in time want to experience some of that on my own. And so I really like the feeling of having that little knot in your stomach going like, wow, I'm really over my skis here. But you know what? That's when revelation happens, and you have to position yourself to be in that spot. And God delivers it. He will tell you what to do. And that's what, but you have to put yourself in that position. You don't get the answer any other way.
By putting yourself in that position, you mean it has to be something that's big enough to matter and a problem painful enough that God would give his attention to.
Yep.
That's
And
it.
you have to put yourself, you have to put yourself in the position of the fact that that it's basically impossible for you to do.
Because.
Because that's when the answer comes. It
Because
you know it's
it, from
beyond your
God,
own
meaning
ability. Yep.
that no supernatural, no God is going to want. I shouldn't say. I want to find out how I can say this well here. Talk
Yeah,
about
yeah.
religion well. You're saying God is not going to want to turn his attention to how can I help someone with a small problem. He's got bigger things to do. But if you've got this big problem, now it's on him. Just like you're not dealing with the small issues at work, it's the big ones that you're brought in for. Is that it? Is that the thinking?
Well, it may not be the size of the problem. The results are a small problem, you get a small result. A big problem, you get a big result. But the way that God rewards you by the fact that you took the risk, and you did something far above your own knowledge and ability, and that's always, and 100% of the time, He shows up. So, but most people. One and an, most people will stand on the sideline and say, "Well, give me the answer and I'll go do it." But God doesn't work that way. God says, "Go do it and I'll give you the answer."
And then what do you do in between these big moments in your life to keep your relationship with God going strong enough and meaningful enough that you're not just a taker when you need something?
Well, look, I think that, I spend quiet time, anywhere from an hour to 2 hours every morning, very quietly thinking about, how can I put myself in a more uncomfortable position? How does he see this circumstance? How does he think about this, right? And I spend my time really compelling myself, really daily to move in that direction, to take that risk, to make that phone call, to do that. And it's a quite exciting, it's a very exciting way to live. I think that most people don't do that because they really are frozen in fear. And I think that a lot of people go like, please take this problem away from me, right? Pray, please take this problem away from me. And I think the opposite. I'm like, oh, you delivered this problem for me because I get a gift from this problem, actually. And so what's the gift? It's going to be an acceleration. It's going to be an upgrade. It's going to be profitable, or there's provision involved. And so when you really know that, why wouldn't you want to tackle every problem that you can? Because it's a joyous experience. It truly
Meaning
is.
that if you hadn't seen people stumble with their phones, trying to install an app, trying to get the Spaces experience to work version one, you wouldn't have discovered a much better system that doesn't even involve updating an app all the time and the app store, and it's just a phone call and everything works beautifully. Got it. That's what you're talking about. And you need that problem in order to get to this elegant solution. And that's the way you think. A great solution is going to come because there's a
Yeah,
big
because
problem.
there's a big problem, and I think people shy away from the problem, but don't do that. Actually, don't be, the failure part of each part of it is such a key important aspect of this. It's part of the journey. So I'm not afraid of that. I mean, look, I'll screw up, I'll make a mistake. That means I'm one step closer to really having this solved. And if I make a really big mistake, then I know the outcome is going to be amazingly
Do people ever
big,
think, or maybe
right?
in the
So
beginning they
it's
thought you were
okay.
naive when you were going through this? Like, here's a person who doesn't see the real problem. They're going to get us in real trouble. Maybe early employees, family members. They did.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that I'm old enough now that people, family members, my own family, people, know to trust that that my process, I end up I end up landing on my feet, right? And so I think that, people get comfortable with that. First time employees, this is a great place to work. Well, why? Well, look, I'm an encourager. I'm an adventurer, and I'm going to stretch you, and you're going to learn. And so it's a good atmosphere, right? And I think people, you have such a great, you have a great impact on people, and you don't have them, they're not part of your company forever, but you get to see them go and do other things and learn from that experience. And so it's that's years later, I've had thousands and thousands of employees, and I love the fact when people come up to me and go like, "Hey, remember 1981? You promoted me, you mentored me, and look what happened in my life, and thank you for that." That's
What
quite
happens when you
satisfying.
don't have it? Have you ever gotten to a place where
Yeah.
you just don't feel it anymore, where you feel down, depressed, unable to work up the energy to believe?
Well, I think everybody does. I mean, I think that I've learned now that if I feel that way, then I've got a, there's a big breakthrough coming. And so, if I'm starting to have anxiety and stress over something, then I'm like, wow, okay, well, look, this is going to be amazing, right? And so, but I think that, everything has a season to it. So, and when I say that, one of the seasons of every company, I like starting them, I like building them, but I usually sell them because once it becomes administrative, right, it doesn't need me, and that's not my thing. So why not pass that on, let somebody else nurture that in a different season, and I'll go and figure out what the next thing is. And so, if I don't feel passionate about it anymore, I'm ready to move on for sure.
Jerry, I'm so psyched about
Yeah.
your. I get this sense of possibility when I hear you talk this way. I wish you did have some way for me to tap back into that energy. I guess that's why a lot of people like working for you, but boy, I wish that there was a way to tap into that energy beyond just working for you, because I get excited about the way you think about the world, the way you think about problems, the way you trust and allow something bigger than yourself to bring a solution, but also believe enough in yourself that if you put yourself in a tough situation, something good could come out of it. Well, if you ever want to do a podcast, Jerry, let me know. Like the Weekly Jerry Skillet podcast. I will help
Well,
initiate that and help it keep it going. All right.
okay. Well, look, I think, look, your show is amazing. I just want to, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have this
Thank you.
conversation with you, Andrew.
Thanks for
I
being on
really am.
here. All
I
right. For
appreciate that.
everyone who
Yeah.
wants to go sign up for this, number one, you have to go and get yourself a parking lot. Number two, you need, no, this is not like a direct-to-consumer sale. We're just letting you know spaces exist. Look for it. And the next time you go through a lot that has it, you go, I remember the guy, Jerry, who talked about this. And next time you go through one that doesn't, maybe let the owners know that they should upgrade a little bit and save themselves some money. Jerry, thanks so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
Thanks.